One. Welcome back for the final time this season of Hoops HD, everybody. This is our Hoops HD 2024-2025 season wrap-up show. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood. Got Matt Sikowski and Joby Forsett up here, John Tytel, and David Griggs, who did not get out of the puppet bunker down below.
It's just been real. I mean, well, as much as we work with the committee, as much as we help them out with the survival board and help the NCAA out, they know that we do the Hoops HD report on Monday nights, yet they insisted on playing the championship game last night. So, and we went and talked to Dave Gavin. I forget what he said during that meeting, like no or thank you for sharing or what the hell are you doing in my house? Get out before I call the cops. I don't remember exactly how that conversation went, but we decided to move it to tonight. It's Tuesday, not Monday.
It's Tuesday, and I'll start with the bad news for you, Griggs. We were running a Hoops HD Beat the Puppet Bracket Challenge. That's up there on the website. You can
I
link over to the
won.
site there. The final standings in Puppets expert picks came in. Oh, there it is, way down at the bottom, 20th place. I
That's
came
only
in
because
fifth, so I
teams
kicked your
cheated.
ass only. The Hoops HD staff bracket we did came in eighth, the one we did on the show. And congrats to somebody named SJs to eight. I don't think that's any of us, but whoever you are out there, shoot us a message on X or a Blue Sky, a direct message, and we'll give you your proper shout outs if you want them. But SJs to eight, congratulations, you won the Beat the Puppet Bracket Challenge.
He can get
That
a print out
was
of
my
the new.
alias. That was my alias. So you can go ahead and let me out.
Chad, you can get a print out of the new Hoops HD logo.
Yes, you can get a
Look
print
forward
out
to
of the
it.
new Hoops HD
Signed.
logo.
Chad will sign it for you.
I'll sign it for you.
Yeah.
It is coming postage due, though. We don't have enough money for a stamp, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the final four, the games. I'll throw them up here on the screen. I got to say, for all the disappointment that we had with games that just weren't exciting, weren't close throughout most of the tournament, we finally had it this weekend with three great games, quite
Yeah.
honestly. Let's start on the left-hand side of the screen there with the Auburn Florida game. Florida's win over Auburn in the first of the it was the first semifinal. Yeah, Matt, let me ask you about that game first of all. The Gators getting to the championship game on that, on the back
Yeah,
of that
that's
play.
a fun high tempo game. Some good shooting, some sloppy play toward the end. But if Florida came back from down eight at the half and very strong second half, it was what they basically did the entire tournament. And then another example of that Saturday night to open up the festivities and that. And Walter Clayton, the back-to-back 30-point games in the Elite Eight in the Final Four, puts him in rarefied air.
Yeah, and Joby, they ended up taking on Houston after Houston looked dead against Duke, and then Duke just the last few minutes, the last 10 minutes or so of that game, maybe 5 minutes of that game, just stopped playing. I don't know what happened.
Well, Shire clearly doesn't practice inbound plays. I mean, my goodness. Yeah, there was a lot of, I think there's been a lot of analysis on this, and I can't disagree with the fact that Duke didn't have a close game all year. And so when they needed to make free throws, they didn't. When they needed to get a ball in on a press, they didn't. It was, I'm not going to fault Cooper Flagg on the last shot. I mean, that's his, hey, you got a clean look that goes in over 50% of the time, that would have, possibly made a difference, going forward. But Houston showed what I loved about Houston all year, which is their absolute unrelenting toughness. It was just, waves of them, and they didn't know how to deal with the long length that while Duke was bigger, they weren't necessarily or taller, they weren't necessarily bigger. They didn't necessarily play as big. And you saw in that the whole Samson culture of every loose ball, it's going to go to Houston. It's just the drive, the want, and he give all the credit to Houston, the clutch play, and that was my favorite game of the tournament.
Because while Duke did give it away a little bit, Houston, I would give more credit to, in the fact that they took it.
One of the things about Houston, a team we all watched a lot this year, and we marveled at them defensively. While they did pressure some, they weren't exactly like a havoc type of full court pressure team. But when they did press throughout the year, particularly Kansas and Duke, they got the turnovers. Could they have been one of the best pressing teams of the year had they simply chosen to press more?
And well, Tytel, let me ask you. That set up that championship game we had last night, and early in the second half, it looked like Houston was going to start pulling away. They're up by double digits. I think they went up 12 points there, and here came the Florida Gators, almost doing to Houston what Houston had done to Duke.
They did, Chad. Houston was up 12 at the under 16 timeout, 42-30 in a very low scoring affair due to a gazillion turnovers and nobody could make a three. And then it was just kind of like, it seemed to me a couple of things happened. Number one, like Walter Clayton started scoring because he did nothing in the first half besides pass the ball and turn it over. Secondly, the officiating, I don't know that it was necessarily good or bad. Different people can feel differently, but Florida got whistled for like five fouls in the first like two and a
Two and
half
a half
minutes of
minutes, yeah.
the second half, and then it just like kind of shifted. And they, I don't know if it
And
was
two
makeup calls or
technicals for
something.
the game too, by the way. Two technicals.
I
And
was
they had only
terrified
had
by
one
one kind of
all
ridiculous,
year. They'd
yeah.
only had one technical all year, and they got two. And then Houston, John, three fouls in 9 seconds.
Correct. I was terrified that the technicals were going to cost them the game, but thank God they didn't, just for sanity's sake. But yes, it was kind of a team effort. It wasn't just Clayton. Richard led the way with 18 points, and they made a bunch of free throws, 17 of 21, and they started rebounding better because in the first half, every single Houston play, it seemed like, was miss a three and have one of the big guys like Tugler or Roberts tip it out like one-handed. It was just, that was their offense. And the second half, they kind of buckled down, got some foul calls to get the big men sitting with foul trouble, and they were able to pull it out at the end on that wild, I'm going to shoot it. No, I'm not going to shoot it. I'm going to drop it. No, I'm not going to pick it up. Oh, wait, that's the game.
Well, he couldn't have picked it up because it would have been traveling had he picked it up, because he did kind of go up to shoot it, then dropped it when the
Yeah.
guy was in his face. And although maybe he would have been better off just touching it, you commit a foul and maybe they miss a free
Right.
throw, you get a shot as opposed to the clock running off.
Or
But
maybe you even turn them over.
yeah, he was definitely aware of the situation that he couldn't touch the ball, but in hindsight, had he touched it, everybody would have been like, oh, he shouldn't have touched it. But with him not touching it, the clock simply ran out. No one, I don't think any of his teammates fully realized what was happening soon enough to run over and grab the ball.
And Matt, at the end though, Kelvin Sampson made the decision there, it seemed like, to go for the win, to go for the three. That's all they were looking for. And Florida did a great job defending the three.
No, that's what, like, actually, I compliment Sampson on that call, giving you all the foul troubles they had. You want to get that game over in regulation. You don't want to go to OT. Whereas, they're two big guys. I think they had at least four fouls, if not, maybe one of them fouled out by then.
Tugler fouled out.
Okay, so yeah, you're running down to Francis at four fouls and Roberts. So hey, why not go for the win? You've got, yeah, 340 plus 3-point shooters in Uzan, Sharp, and Cryer. If one of them gets a good look, you can go hit the three.
Yeah, and going back and looking at it again, that's a really good point. Houston was going for the win, and Florida was not going. Florida's defense almost seemed to be of the mentality of if they tie it, oh well, we'll get them in overtime, but they're not going to beat us. So you had a team going for the win, and a team, I don't want to say Florida would have conceded the tie, but they were certainly zeroed in on guarding the 3-point goal and not getting beat.
I'd almost go back to a little pet peeve of mine, Joby, though. Calling timeouts, and if Sampson had saved a timeout as opposed to using them up in the pass and saved it for the final seconds, when he saw that there was no play available, that you would have had the opportunity to call timeout and maybe try to set something to tie the game. But he was out of timeouts. That wasn't even an option.
But Chad, that would have meant a timeout in the middle of the play.
Yeah, I mean, one of my pet
I'm,
peeves
but
is
if the
live ball
rules allow it, you should use it. But when you
timeouts.
use up all your timeouts, Other points of game, the game when you shouldn't have.
No, I
I
get
am
to
absolutely with Chad on this, by the way, that we need to dump, get rid of live ball timeouts.
That's a discussion for another day. But while the rule is available, he didn't have the chance to do that timeout
Yeah, he
against
didn't have
DeBar.
a chance. The shame is, he clearly took a chance when Cryer didn't have the initial look. There was a clear, it was clear that Sharp was, that he had trust in Sharp. He had trust in Sharp in the previous possession when Sharp unfortunately dribbled off his knee. And Florida, to their credit, rotated beautifully. And I think, I don't know if, I don't know if you do call a timeout in that situation. You're hoping that your alternate, because Samson all tournament long was on it in terms of his play calling, of his play design. I actually think he had a play design for that as the alternative out. And when it was cut off, hats off to Florida more than a mistake to Houston.
I guess in the end, he went for the win. He clearly went for the win. Florida's defense, Tytel, they were one of the best 3-point defensive teams of the nation all year.
They were number five in the nation, 29.4% allowed behind the arc. But to Kelvin Sampson's point, his team was third in the nation with 39.4% making from behind the arc. So I get why he wanted to make the three. And I also get why it's your pet peeve. But Chad, I don't know that I want to second guess Kelvin Sampson. Like, I know he hasn't won a title, but he's won everything except a title, right?
No, I'm not second guessing him as much as just saying that, hey, I've got problems with timeouts altogether. And it was kind of my chance to throw a cheap shot in there about it. But if we're
Well
going to
done.
have these timeout rules I don't like, save yourself a timeout. Find a way to do it.
Well, and they did have a wasted timeout, in my opinion, in the middle of the half that I actually thought, wait a minute, why are they going 16 seconds before the under? I think it was the under 12.
Exactly.
It was like, and it wasn't like in the post, it wasn't like Florida was in the midst of the huge run. I do think, and John pointed this out. After the second technical, which was just a boneheaded play, a well-earned technical of spiking the ball, it did seem that the officials got all of a sudden squeezed a lot tighter on Houston's the hand checking, the underneath, the underneath pushing and shoving. We could argue, oh, it should have always been there, et cetera. But the officiating did change. And that was probably the tougher component. And so maybe Sampson was using the timeouts accordingly to do that, to alert his team. But, if you're going to second guess, I would say, hey, wait the 16 seconds before, for the under, for the under, I think it was 12, under 12 timeout. And you would have had that, you would have had one more in your bag.
I'm going to kind of zoom out here a little bit here, try to get the whole bracket on the screen. It's tough to quite get it all there. But now that the tournament is complete, just kind of want to run through each of you here for your thoughts on the tournament as a whole. There were complaints about the games, complaints about top four seeds, but on the other hand, some of the best numbers viewer-wise that we've seen in years.
A long,
So, Grace, let me start with you since you're jumping in.
well, okay. Well, I was about to ask a question. I have not seen the ratings for the championship game. Are they in yet?
I did not see them either.
Okay. The Final Four, it was the best Final Four since 2017. The round of 64 and 32, which I realized we covered, it was the highest in 32 years since 1992. So while a lot of the diehard traditional fans like us are probably bothered, understandably so, by some of the changes that have happened in the game to where it feels like we're playing fantasy sports every off season with the restructuring of the rosters. The normal fans, the general like fans, seem to be eating this up. Like the bandwagon fans, the mainstream fans, whatever you want to call them, the non-diehards. The sport is thriving as much as ever. So that's one of the thoughts on it. And while it was more chalky than some of the tournaments we've seen in recent years, we have seen things in recent years that we were seeing more often in the than what we were probably 6 or 7 years prior. Loyola getting to the Final Four, Florida Atlantic getting to the Final Four. I want to say it was St. Peter's getting to the Elite Eight. I just remember when Gonzaga made that first deep Elite Eight run in 98, 99, I think it was. Nobody, it blew everybody's mind that could happen. And then it started to happen every year, and teams went even further. So it isn't as if we've not had chalky tournaments at any point before. And I don't know if you can really say that this is the direction it's going, or if it was just sort of a little bit of an aberration. We follow under the radar pretty closely. Some of those teams are pretty good. The teams that were good this year, Drake in particular, was no, I mean, they were off the radar back in October. We were zeroing in on teams like McNeese and Grand Canyon that just didn't really come to fruition. So, while it was chalky, and while there weren't a lot of really exciting games, minus the Alabama State play-in game and then the three Final Four games, popularity-wise, this tournament was a roaring success.
Oh, there's a few other good games in there. I wouldn't say that, but there
Yeah.
weren't as many. But Matt, what do you think? What was your thoughts on the tournament as a whole?
Well, I think yeah, some of these favorites of that, now that you get these fifth and sixth year COVID players out, I think it's going to help the equity a little bit. Now, with NIL and that, it's some of these mid-majors, you're going to probably lose your best players to a power conference team now. But I think it'll be a little bit, maybe a little less of that and more. Yeah, once you get the fifth and sixth year players out, and that these teams that are wholly transfer reliant might be in a little trouble when you're trying to build an entire roster. And I guess the numbers are still there, but maybe not the quality of player.
Okay. Titel, what about you?
I think I'm gonna have a few memories from this tournament. One is how chalky it was. Legendarily so. Like, it's very rare. I think only once ever with all four one seeds making it. Secondly, I'll remember the SEC getting 14 bids and not just having a bunch of first round flameouts, but as you can see on the screen, Auburn, Florida, Tennessee, Alabama. Like, we had a legit shot at an all SEC Final Four. I don't think it'll ever happen, but the fact that it's even in play is amazing. And then on a personal level, it was great. I got to go to the South region and see all these power conference teams going at it. And I got to stay up till the crack of dawn watching Arizona beat Oregon. Those are some of my memories from this year.
Joby, how about you? Any thoughts on this tournament?
No, I think I will echo what others said. Very chalky. And to follow up on Griggs's question, ratings are out. 18.2 million watched it.
Ooh, yeah.
That is the highest since 2019. So not, 25 years.
Yeah.
And remember, ratings are done by average viewership per minute, not the total number of people who tune in. So the better the game and the more exposure in 2019 was a pretty good game. I'm trying to remember who won. Oh, yeah.
Was that the Duke? Was that the Carolina year? The Duke year? What was that? Virginia,
Well, yeah.
obviously,
On
yes.
the
That was the
heels of
year
two.
Virginia was down without the ball. With less than 3 seconds to go three times and somehow won all
Well,
three times.
a true stat is that in the final three games, Virginia was losing twice and tied with under a second to go. So that just as a point of privilege. But yes, the chalkiness of it, but you did have high quality, and what probably drove it was, yeah, you had, house becoming household names and attractions like Cooper Flagg. Clayton made himself a name. Now I think Jani Broome in the semifinals. You did have some star power in this tournament, and the star power came to play. Like I said, it is funny, the if Broome had been facing Flagg in the final, we have had, hey, is this for the true player of
Yeah.
the year? I mean, it would have been a great matchup, and it still was a great matchup, even though neither got there. So
They're coming up tomorrow night in the third place game, Joby.
yeah.
Ralph Sampson says hello. So as such, the power, the star power does get that casual fan, as David points out. But I truly believe you've got to have, I would like to see a tournament with more upsets, with more. You don't need to have all the 14s beat the threes, but man, it'd be nice if you saw one 13 or higher, bring it down. In the fashion, here's Chad, a good game that was there. In the fashion, we saw Maryland pull off that amazing buzzer beater, because that was one another pretty good game with Mr.
Yes,
Quinn
that was one of those I
and
was thinking of.
get that in.
Absolutely.
But anyway, fun tournament as always, but it's rarely not going to be when you have 63 different points of g and games to choose from watching it.
We do like to this time you also give a shout out to all the champions out there. First of all, while we hate to do it because we know our friend Zach Singer is a UConn guy, Tytel, we got to give a shout out to Gina winning his 5 millionth women's championship and the UConn Huskies women's team.
All he does, Chad, I mean, and it's not just that he wins like 10 in a row. It's over such a long period of time against so many great coaches. And he beat, I believe, 3-1 seeds along the way to do it, which is something only my Wildcats did back in 97 on the men's side. So
I
do
would
not
argue
fire
I
Gino.
would argue it's only 2.5 because USC was without Juju Watkins, but yeah, but it was technically 3-1
Sure.
seeds. Griggs, I'll throw this bracket up here. The NIT ended middle of last week,
Yeah.
and this was one of the most, even though it wasn't the name brands we normally get, this is one of the most fun NITs I remember in a long time.
This had a feel similar to the CIT when it first opened. It was a lot of predominantly under the radar schools, and the games were great. A lot of these teams and their fans were excited to be in it. The NIT is not the NCAA tournament. A lot of the times you go into it, or a lot of teams go into it wishing they were in another event, and they don't really bring it. There's just not a lot of electricity around it, at least not in the early rounds. But this one was pretty electric, and while we weren't covering it nearly as much as we were the NCAA tournament. Every night on the chats, on the email, on the text messages, we're like, this is better. This is more exciting than what a lot of the NCAA
And
tournament
it
games have
ends with
been.
an overtime champ, 1 point championship game between Chattanooga winning it over Irvine.
And a beautifully executed play by Irvine where they did everything right except hit the layup. I mean, it was wow, what a tournament this was.
Heartbreak for Irvine in that final play, but congrats to Chattanooga, a team that we liked out of the SoCon to maybe if they got the NCAA tournament, maybe they could win a game. That's kind of what we're talking about, but I think they'd rather take a championship home, honestly.
And I think that this goes to serve some of the under the radar teams that are worried about playing road bye games and starting off with a losing record. No one remembers, and you probably won't remember it either until I point this out, that Chattanooga started the season 0-3. They went out to the West Coast. They played USC, UCLA. I forget who all they played out there. But a lot of teams are hesitant to do that because they think it just sets a tone for the season that they'll never rebound from. They rebounded from it just fine.
Matt, don't know if you saw any of it, but Nebraska Cornhuskers cut down the nets and took home a
No one
ton of
else did
cash
either.
too
No,
for the
I definitely did not
CBC.
see any of it.
Okay.
Even being a Big East guy, having the Big East teams in it, no, it's an atrocity. Though. Hey, it ended up producing a fun IT, so hey, there you go. But Matt, like, no, I have no interest in the crowd, and I don't even think
Okay.
I'd watch Marquette play if it was in it.
Okay, this event, what was Boise State doing? Because I thought it was all Big East, Big Ten, and Big
They
12.
didn't have enough teams that
They
were
didn't have
interested.
enough teams.
They had to pan it out with Boise State and George Washington and a few others.
This was, and not to take away from the effort of the players, as an event, this was a colossal tire fire. No one attended. You know how bad the ratings were? We didn't watch it.
I think one of the worst parts was the end of one of the games overlapped the first national semifinal. So if you were interested in watching a little basketball, Joey, it turned it off then because the real games are on.
It's just awful. And by the way, the final, you know how I said 18.1 million people watched the championship? The ratings are also out for the crown, no joke.
I can't wait.
822,000.
I thought you were going to say 822, and I would have
I
thought
thought
that
yeah,
also.
that is
That's
exactly
way more than
what
what
you
I was
thought.
going to guess. That is
Yeah.
way more than what I would have
You could
guessed.
take it like at least one digit off, I'd have believed it.
Yeah,
Yeah,
that that.
yeah, it is like, yeah, it was one, yeah, essentially 1/20th. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean that's like I mean that's actually for a regular season game, not a bad rating. And I thought
Yeah.
this was way worse than the
It was
regular
higher
season.
than the NIT, actually.
Wait, is that the championship game?
The
It was something
championship
to do
game
on
versus
Sunday night
championship
when
game.
nothing else was on.
So,
I had it on in the background, quite honestly.
but remember, 822,000. The state of Nebraska has about 822,000.
Yeah. I don't think anyone in Florida cared for UCF.
And it was on the Fox flagship, so like, you know.
Can't win an NCAA tournament game in school history, but they've won a championship of sorts. So
Of
congrats
sorts,
to the
yeah.
Huskers. I'll go ahead and pull this down here as we run through a couple other championships. Just really quick note, we know last week Illinois State won the CBI. Congrats on the women's side to Minnesota for winning the WBIT, Buffalo for winning the WNIT, Nova Southeastern, your D2 men's champion, and Grand Valley
Yeah.
State on the women's side. Trinity of Connecticut, your D3 men's champion, NYU on the women's side. And Griggs, I know you watch these. College of Idaho won the NAI men's championship, and Dort of Iowa won the NAI women's championship. So your thoughts on those
Yeah.
games?
Big wins for them. The NAIA app is gone. I used to actually I used to pull it up and see what was going on every now and
It's on
then.
their website. They've got a website
Yeah.
you can
Okay.
follow along. But
Bring the app back, NAIA. That was a beautiful thing.
honestly, that's pretty much all I got in my notes here for tonight. So what I thought I would do is do one more time here, run through each of you for any other final thoughts or any other comments you had on not just on this turn, but on the entirety of the 2024-2025 season, everything we saw, and maybe even a little bit of what you might be looking forward to in the offseason and heading into next year. We will be doing several, at least one podcast a month in the offseason and focusing on some of these off-the-court issues like the house settlement and the NIL and the portal and all that. But Matt, why don't I start with you?
Yeah, I see. That's what I did not really enjoy seeing the 14 SEC teams in, and that like the Big 10 and Big 12 end up not being a terribly high number thought compared to what it could be. But like, I want to see a little more parity in that. I will say the Big East schools, man, they look like they're getting some of that settlement money or whatever that might equal out, seeing what they're doing in the portal here. But hopefully that, and then even the how begrudgingly saying like the ACC to be better, and that like there's some historical programs that make it like, and I think Louisville's rise this year was cool. There could be even better next year, and that so see some of those up like Joby's Virginia, and then a couple of the ACC powers to where let's get this a little more even field and not just this SEC playground.
Yeah, I don't think we'll ever see 14 teams again, but hey, you never know. Joby.
Well, it's very interesting. You know, we always, as soon as one championship ends, everybody starts looking ahead. That's just the nature of human. And it was very interesting that the top odds right now are going to two of the Final Four teams, Houston and Duke. And part of the reason is because both of them, we know Flag's gone, but Duke is going to actually probably retain, and Knoeppel's probably gone as well. But Duke has the number one recruiting class by a lot coming in. Combined with possibly a lot of key players staying, you match that with Houston, who's while Cryer's obviously, you know, his 10th year is completed, so
Yeah.
he can no longer play. But they have like they have a lot of their talents. Uzan being very key to that. You know, he was great throughout the tournament. Tugler's back, and so Houston, we could see a rematch if the odds are. We could see a rematch of that amazing semifinal in the final next year if a lot of the projections play out as the early ones do early ones are set.
I wonder who the picks were this time last year. That's something we should.
Connecticut, I looked ahead if you want
Yeah.
to know. It was Connecticut and Kansas.
Okay, that didn't quite did not quite play out. Not quite. Tight out.
So last Saturday, the Hall of Fame announced its inductees for the class of 2025. And if you don't think that winning a title matters, allow me to share the stories of five legends who made it. Billy Donovan won back-to-back titles as coach at Florida. Maya Moore won back-to-back titles as a player at UConn. Sue Bird won a pair of titles at UConn. Carmelo won a championship at Syracuse, and Sylvia Fowles has never won a title, but she made four straight Final Fours at LSU. So winning titles matters.
It does. Riggs.
Yeah, it's just kind of crazy to go back to 2018, when Houston was still sort of coming out of a long 30-year dry spell. I think that was the first year they had won any sort of NCAA tournament game at all since the Five Slammajama years. And that year, you might recall this, or you will when I say it. It looked like they were going to be heading to the Sweet 16, and I thought, oh man, it's going to be great to see them on that stage and see Houston basketball mean something again. And then Michigan hit a three-quarter shot, I think, to
Yeah.
knock them out by a point. And then Michigan from that point went all the way to become the national runners up. So it's just I don't think people realize just how bad Houston was when Kelvin Sampson got there and how good he has made them. It's one of the better coaching jobs that anyone's done, in the last couple decades that I can remember. Baylor was another situation with Scott Drew, another phenomenal turnaround job. But he is one of the best. I know he hasn't won a title, but there's something to be said about turning a program that wasn't even good by under the radar standards into a national blue blood powerhouse program. And they're going to be back. I don't think that this is his last Final Four.
Yeah, it's just kind of crazy too. Coaches like him and Will Wade got guys
Yeah.
that were almost blacklisted out of basketball for things that are so acceptable right now.
Yeah.
It's a joke. I mean, he made a couple too many phone calls,
Yeah.
and he was out of work for a couple of years because of it.
Yeah,
But
you gotta,
wow, I think you're
yeah.
right.
So, it's just been kind of fun to watch him build that program there. A few other just highlights from the year, another good stories, and I'll just do this rapid fire shout out. Drake was an incredible story. They weren't, like we said, we thought they were going to be off the radar with almost no D1 experience. For them to win 30 games and have the year that they had was incredible. I thought Maine going further under the radar, other than Drake, may have exceeded expectations more than any other team this year. I know they didn't get to the NCAAs, but my God, this is a team that I don't ever remember. I know they have, but I can't recall a year where they finished higher than eighth. Doing really well in the America East, and were even on the tail of first place at the time. Another good story, UC San Diego, a recent transitional team, winning the Big West and nearly winning an NCAA tournament game. It's been kind of fun to watch that. So, between the lines, as frustrating as things get with the NCAA and outside the lines and everything that's sort of in orbit now, and as unsettling as it is to think about where we may be going with college sports, and will the NCAA tournament even exist in this format if the power conferences get control of the championships? There are still great stories. It was still a great season. Between the lines, it was a lot of fun to watch. And every week, it was fun to come on here for Under the Radar for the Hoops HD report. And then on the bracket reveals, it's like, the thing that's so fun about the bracket reveal shows or the bracket rundown shows is none of us really know what the bracket's going to look like at the start of the show. So there's always this anticipation of what kind of seed list are we going to build or what's the bracket going to look like. So it was still a lot of fun this year. And if I need to do anything, I need this because I need to remember that this sport is fun.
Yeah, there is a lot going off the court, not between the lines, I guess. And we'll be spending their off season, as I mentioned, discussing that. But at the moment, though, on behalf of Matt Zukowski, Joby Fortson, John Tytel, David Griggs, a shout out to all of our other colleagues who couldn't be here tonight, like John Stalica, David Dorman, Rocco Miller from Redacted2.org, Mike Cha, Brian Black. I'm sure I forgot somebody. If I did, I sincerely apologize to whoever you are. I do want to thank you all for joining us not only tonight, but throughout the season. We'll be back probably sometime in mid-May for our first of our off-season podcasts. And of course, one last thing to throw up here on this screen is now that Florida has won it, we are all ready to start talking about, as Joby mentioned, 2026, the Final Four coming to Indianapolis next year. And that's what the goal is now, to take that championship. Thanks for joining us, everybody, and we will talk to you again real soon.